97.9 The Hill, WCHL, and UNC School of Media and Journalism present Sports Focus with Charlie Tuggle. Sports Focus, dedicated to in-depth examination of issues of overriding importance in the sports world. Each week, we'll discuss problems and look for solutions in professional, collegiate, and amateur sports. From Carroll Hall on the Carolina campus, here's your host, UNC Journalism Professor Charlie Tuggle.
Welcome to Sports Focus. Our topic today, the aftermath of the Golden State Warriors' second straight NBA championship. It's their third in 4 years. Our guest, Ian Gordon, managing editor for Mother Jones Magazine, based in San Francisco. Ian is a Carolina alum. So, Ian, Mother Jones isn't exactly a big sports publication, but you have a lot of sports writing in your background. Tell me first, what have the few days following the championship been like, especially with the parade? I've seen a lot written in national media about the parade and specifically Steph Curry's enjoyment, if you will, of the parade.
Yeah, I mean, these parades have become pretty common around here. 3 and 4 years is nothing to sneeze at. I would say this parade was fun on the fringes, in the sense that, you know, the players who tend to have the most fun at these parades and are kind of doing the most outrageous things and maybe enjoying themselves the most are often some of the reserves and lesser known players, the Jordan Bells and the Nick Youngs of the world. And that's been the case in other parades too. Obviously Draymond Green loves to have a good time and takes every opportunity to print a new t-shirt to poke fun at the Cavs and LeBron. But, Steph and Clay and to a certain extent, Kevin Durant are all, you know, they're having a lot of fun, but they're also major brands and have to kind of toe that line a little more than some of the lesser known or lesser represented players.
All right, so let's go back in time to when, you were the sports editor at the Daily Tar Heel here at Carolina. You also worked for ESPN, the magazine. You covered Steph Curry in college. How did he impress you at that time?
Well, I mean, he was just such a phenomenal shooter, even in his early days at Davidson. He was so slight, and he just looked like such a kid out there, especially his freshman year. But the thing that I, will always remember about Steph Curry is covering the tournament in, I believe it was 2008, when Davidson made it to the Elite Eight. And I was actually covering their regional. I was covering the Wildcats regional. And they played their Sweet 16 and Elite Eight games in Detroit. So it was at Ford Field. And, I was at the game where Steph basically just lit up Wisconsin. And in a lot of ways, it kind of felt like his real coming out party on national TV in front of LeBron James, who was there as a fan and was sitting right in front of me on press row. It was just incredible. Steph totally tore apart this Wisconsin defense, just played a great game, and then came, an eyelash away from beating Kansas in the Elite Eight game, and Kansas went on to, win the national title that year.
So, a lot of stuff that I've read about Curry when he was in college or even when he was in high school at Charlotte Christian, it's like, yeah, this kid can shoot, but man, he's small. And not height-wise, but just physically small. Lots of stuff I've read about how he didn't really fill out his jersey very well, and maybe that's what kept some bigger-name programs, UNC, for example, from going after Curry, but man, what a mess that was.
Well, even Virginia Tech, where his dad went, they offered him they basically made him a preferred walk-on. They said, you can come on and walk on here, but you'll have kind of the preferred status, and maybe get a scholarship eventually. So he couldn't even get a scholarship at Dell's alma mater. Davidson was always there, and give the Davidson staff a ton of credit. They stood in there and kind of hung tough and kept giving the same message over and over. And they really believed in Steph, and he was right there, right down the street, basically. And it really worked out. The thing that I want to go back to the to Detroit for a second, because the thing that really stood out to me and, you know, all the other press folks who were there that year came between the Wisconsin and Kansas games. They had a shoot-around day. You know, the crowd was not, there weren't that many people there. I mean, Dell was there. So Steph's family was there. And there wasn't a ton of people there. But Davidson comes out to shoot around, and they're probably out there for 45 minutes to an hour. And Steph took like 55 or 60 shots. We started charting them after about 10 or 15 because he didn't miss his first 10 or 15 shots. And everyone was like, oh, this is pretty interesting. And over the course of an hour, he missed like three or four shots. I mean, it was incredible. He just wasn't missing anything. And more than that, almost every shot was, you know, nothing but nylon, pure net. It was incredible. It was one of the most impressive, just straight shooting, straight examples of shooting I've ever seen in my life. And if you go to a Warriors game and watch him warm up, you're going to get the same kind of super fun, super entertaining warm up. A lot of makes and a lot of very entertaining makes along the way.
Sports Focus, we'll be right back.
You're listening to Sports Focus with Charlie Tuggle. And now back to the show on 97.9 FM WCHL.
Welcome back to Sports Focus. Our topic is the aftermath of the Golden State Warriors NBA championship. We're talking with Ian Gordon of Mother Jones Magazine. Ian, it's not like his shooting touch suddenly developed when he got to Davidson. I mean, the kid could shoot in high school. Put yourself in the shoes of Duke, NC State, North Carolina, Kentucky. Don't you think these people are kicking themselves a little bit?
Well, it's so easy to say this in hindsight, right? I mean, you know, I think you can see, we can see Steph now as a, you know, two-time MVP and a guy who has an incredible handle and is a great passer on top of all of that. You know, a guy who's really morphed into just a kid to being, you know, one of the top five players in the world. But, you know, at the time, I mean, he was undersized and he was also pretty short for a while. And he kind of was a late bloomer height-wise. Obviously super slight. And, you know, when college coaches are looking at players who are small, I mean, their main concern is defensive, right? Can this guy guard at the Division I level? And I think that was a big question about Steph, is could he guard? Could he stay in front of anyone? Could he hold up anyone? Or, you know, back then, it's a different kind of basketball, too. I mean, we're talking about the late 2000s. We had not yet entered the three-point era in the way that we have entered it now. I mean, obviously, Steph helped usher that era in himself. You know, so the kind of advent of hyper three-point shooting that we're seeing, obviously at the NBA level, but also now in the college level with the likes of Trae Young at Oklahoma. I mean, we're only now starting to see that and see college coaches, you know, really say, yeah, let's take 25, 30, 40 three-pointers a game.
So let's talk about Steph Curry as a person. It's interesting to me that on Facebook, on Twitter, on his social media, he does not tout himself as an NBA All-Star first. First, I think I have this by memory correct in terms of order. It's believer, husband, father, son, brother, Golden State Warrior. Is that just, you know, him trying to, is that image building or is that the real Steph Curry?
You know, I, not knowing Steph personally, it's hard to say. I mean, I'd hate to say, like, yes, that's definitely the man, but certainly what you hear from other players, both, you know, his teammates and people around him in the Warriors organization and elsewhere, that's kind of the genuine deal. I mean, one of the things that has made the Warriors you know, click so well over the years is Steph's ability to not only be a great shooter and, you know, kind of a game-changing talent, but also his ability to kind of make his teammates better in the ways that, you know, some superstars have a hard time with. I mean, I think that he is really good about helping the team and the organization build a winning culture. And that's a really squishy thing to talk about. It's really hard to say, like, how, you know, how do you do that? What kind of person do you have to be? I think there's all kinds of ways to build a winning culture. The way that LeBron does it, I think, is probably really different from the way that Steph does it. But, you know, I think part of it is that it's not necessarily about him. It's about winning. It's about the team. And he's happy to take kind of a backstage at times. And I think you see that certainly with the signing of Kevin Durant. You know, if Steph were a huge ego or was a guy that wanted to get 30 shots, 25 shots a game, that would have been a really tricky thing to pull off. But, you know, it's been quite the opposite. It's kind of like figuring out how to both get those, you know, get both of those guys to get their shots and to take over games when necessary.
Yeah, Curry actually helped recruit Durant to the Warriors. So it can't be that, hey, I don't want this guy coming in because, you know, I'm not going to get as many shots as I would want to. He was active in the recruiting of Kevin Durant.
Absolutely. And, you know, I mean, they're just so different. And Kevin Durant, you know, for as great as Steph is, I mean, Kevin Durant is a generational talent. I mean, he's a 7-foot shooting guard. I mean, you know, the guy who can get any shot he wants at any point in the game. And, you know, when you look at the 2016 finals and the Warriors' offense really sputtered down the stretch. And, you know, sure, Steph was coming off a knee injury, and sure, the Warriors didn't have Andrew Bogut, who had been a kind of a key cog in their offense in terms of passing and setting really solid screens. I mean, they really clogged up their offense, you know, kind of toward the end of that series. And that's how the Cavs were able to get back in, being down 3-1. And, you know, just thinking about who could we get to give the ball to in situations where we just need a bucket. And you look at a guy like Kevin Durant, he can get a bucket, that's for sure. And he can get a bucket in almost any situation against any defense.
So they bring Durant in, and Curry is involved in that. Durant winds up winning finals MVP 2 years in a row. And so the question is, how will that affect the legacy of Steph Curry? Because he's not yet been the MVP of the finals. Is that such a big deal?
You know, maybe, maybe not. I mean, it kind of depends on your perspective. I'm not sure if it's a big deal to Steph Curry. And even if it were, he wouldn't say it is. It's hard to know. It's hard to know. You know, I don't get the sense that we're going to look back at Steph Curry's career and say, man, if only he were good in the finals. It's not like, it's not the question of like, oh, he was terrible in the finals. The 2016 finals, where he was coming off the injury, was probably his worst finals. And he averaged like 22 points a game, and, you know, shooting numbers were pretty inefficient. But when you're looking at the rest of the other three finals he's been in, he's averaging 25 to 27 points a game, you know, over 5 to 6 assists a game. You know, he just has been really, really good. And you can easily make the argument that he deserved MVP in 2015, the year that Andre Iguodala got it, for his defensive effort on LeBron. But, you know, I don't get the sense that that Steph cares that much, and certainly not in the way that Kevin Durant, who's really talked about like wanting to be validated among his high-level peers in the NBA, has talked about it.
Sports Focus, we'll come right back.
You're listening to Sports Focus with Charlie Tuggle, and now back to the show.
Welcome back to Sports Focus. We're talking with Ian Gordon from San Francisco, Mother Jones Magazine. We're talking about the Warriors, but more specifically about Steph Curry. So, Ian, you made reference to this before, and I really want to spend a little bit of time talking about this. The stuff that Curry does, and lots of people have written about this, that draw attention, right? He draws the eyes, at least, of two or three defenders at a time, which gives, not to say that Durant, you know, isn't a great player in his own right, but he gives Durant and others a much better look than they might have otherwise. And that's something that doesn't show up on the stat sheet.
No, I mean, you know, that's a really great point, Charlie. I think one of the things that Steph does better than anyone in the NBA, and this is something that people have written about, Tom Haberstroh of ESPN and more recently Bleacher Report has written quite a bit about, and that's Steph's gravity on the court, and by gravity he means kind of how he draws defenders to him, no matter where he is on the court. They're kind of pulled toward him, and you can see this in any scheme, you know, any defense that they're playing against. How they just, you just can't lose sight of him. You can never lose sight of Steph. And you know, the games, you know, when the Warriors are playing teams that have poor defensive communication, they're always losing sight of Steph. You know, Steph is just finding his way to easy layups. He's cutting back door. He's sneaking his way along the perimeter and finding himself in the corner for a wide open look at a three. And that's death. I mean, you just can't do that. I mean, and that's one of the things that was so impressive about the Houston Rockets and in the Western Conference Finals is their ability to not only track Steph and be physical with him, which are, you know, things you have to do, but also, you know, really kind of clogging up the Warriors' offense in a way that hasn't happened, you know, since Durant arrived in Oakland. I mean, it's just really interesting to see how much isolation basketball the Warriors end up playing in that series, and how it really took until Chris Paul injured his hamstring late in Game 5 for the Warriors to start figuring out how to attack the Rockets and how to get Steph and Klay Thompson and Kevin Durant freed up on the perimeter.
It's interesting to me because, you look at it as an opposing team. If you lose Steph Curry, you're dead. If you don't lose him, you're paying too much attention to him, and you're dead anyway. Because there's
right. Sarah. Yeah. Absolutely. And, you're talking about, it'd be one thing, right, if Steph Curry were on the Knicks and you could send two men at him at any point and you really have no shooters that you have to worry about. But you're talking about potentially leaving Kevin Durant, one of the best shooters in the NBA and also a seven-footer, open. And you're talking about potentially leaving Klay Thompson, easily one of the best shooters in NBA history, open. It's just a problem. I mean, what a headache for coaches. And, you know, that's why you see so often in games, Andre Iguodala, Draymond Green, whoever's playing center for the Warriors, wide open. And they're just open looks for these guys. And, you know, that's just a really interesting quandary for teams to deal with. Like, who are you going to leave open? Because you've got to leave someone open to make this work.
So we have a couple of minutes left. And I know this is an unanswerable question, but I'm going to ask it anyway, because you see stuff all the time about who's the greatest, who's the best of all time. Steph Curry, I think, has to be in that mix. Durant has to be in that mix. LeBron has to be in that mix. And of course, you know, both of us being from UNC, you know, the GOAT, Michael Jordan. From what you've seen and observed, if you could pick one of those four guys to anchor a team that you're coaching, who would you pick and why?
I mean, I can pick Jordan if I want.
Yeah.
Oh, I'm picking MJ 10 days out of 10. I mean, you know, it's
because you're from Carolina, right?
I grew up, the first real basketball that I started watching, I was like 12 in 1993. So, that Bulls Lakers series. I'm confusing my series. I was young in the first Bulls Lakers series, which now I'm drawing a blank of what year it was. Maybe it was 91. That was a kind of huge moment for me as a basketball fan, just seeing Jordan at kind of the peak of his kind of early career powers. And then, you know, we watched a lot of Bulls those years because they were on TV a lot, you know. I have just an incredible appreciation for Jordan, and I think that LeBron is fantastic, and I think the argument for him as the second best player, right, you know, is very solid. Like, I think that he surpassed the Russells and Kareems and Wilts of the world. I think he really is the second best player of all time at this point, and I think there's a legitimate argument that he could be the greatest player of all time. I mean, it's just, which is incredible. I mean, it is incredible that anyone could actually challenge MJ. And the thing is, like, you know, some of it has to do with LeBron's uncanny ability to not be injured. His endurance is incredible, and his ability to just keep playing year after year. I mean, we may be here 5 years from now saying, wow, LeBron's still out there, still competing for championships every year. That's incredible.
And that does it for this edition of Sports Focus. Thanks to our guest, Ian Gordon. Thanks also to engineer Gary Kirk. And as always, thanks to you for listening. Cheers.
Thanks to Richard Southall, Mark Nagel, and Deborah Southall at the College Sport Research Institute at the University of South Carolina for their research and guidance and for access to CSRI's international network of sources. Sports Focus is the service of UNC School of Media and Journalism.